today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
If Missioner Burma can't do it, how can I do it?
Hey everybody, Patrick here, Foster that is. On behalf of Jim Linehan, I want to welcome everyone to another episode of Rockin' the Suburbs. And I want to issue an apology to all of our listeners. Yesterday's episode had some technical difficulties. And once I was alerted to that, I ran it all through the discombobulator and we got an error code back that said, error code Patrick. The tracks got a little out of line there, overlap, made for a uncomfortable listening experience. So we did take that episode down, and I want to tell you we have corrected those problems. And please go back and listen to yesterday's episode. It should be posted now in a much better version, as it was so intended. And also enjoy today's episode. Chris Tsarenko is a great guy. And apologize to him, too, for that mess up. But as a podcaster himself, I'm sure he knows how those things go. So it's surprising it doesn't happen more often on Rockin' the Suburbs, given our volume of content. But apologies to all listeners, hope you enjoy the interview. Just one quick note before we jump back into our interview with Chris. Part two, new music picks are due this Sunday, that's correct, September 21st. If you get your picks in by then, we're going to begin new music on the 22nd of this month. And that's new music, of course, for August 2025. What did you hear in August that you loved? And why don't you tell us about it? How else am I going to find new songs if you guys don't tell me about it? All right, so let's get back to the interview with Chris. We're going to hear Jim start off this part of the show with a question for Chris. And I find it very interesting. You know, he gets a lot of musicians, comedians, writers, and artistic types on his podcast, Revolutions Per Movie. And this is a very interesting question about how they approach it and how they approach talking about something that they don't usually talk about. So I think that's great. So here we go.
Do you find that the musicians appreciate this outlet? It gives them a chance to talk about something they don't normally get asked about or get to engage in conversation about, right?
I'm amazed at how many people say yes. And I think it is, part of it is the music world, the film world, the comedian world, it's so small. Everybody kind of knows everyone. So at some point, like, the comedians are impressed with the musicians I've had, and the musicians are impressed with the comedians I've had. You know what I mean? It's like the musicians already know themselves, you know, and Magnuson knows Bob Burt already, you know. So I'm building this thing that is kind of my the world that I like to live in, you know, in terms of, you know, the things I love. And of course, I do talk to people that, like, I've just been turned on to. You know, like comedians or musicians that are newer that I'm just saw stuff and I'm like, or somebody told me about that came on the show, like, oh, you should have this person on. And they're brilliant because, again, you can't know it all. But I think that they really do like that. It's not necessarily, I don't know, they're just always so into it. They're always so happy to do it. And I think that the things, no one has to come on the show, right? You know? And so when they choose to do it, they're ready to go. They're like, I'm ready to talk about Purple Rain, you know? You know, they're right, ready to go.
Right. And they're not being asked the same questions they've been asked hundreds of times, right? So
no, if somebody comes in and wants to talk about the Sun City Girls, that's such a different place. then, you know, no one's picked Song Remains the Same yet. No one's picked Hard Day's Night. No one's picked Don't Look Back. They, you know, it's always just like, wow, really? That's your choice? That's so cool. Like, I'm excited because it's so off a little. And then it just speaks so much to who the person is, you know. And obviously, of course, Craig Finn's going to pick Rock and Roll High School. It's like perfect, you know. But I do like that a lot of the times I'm like, I did not see that coming. I'm so excited you picked that.
How many of the films that have been chosen were ones that you had not seen before?
Not a lot, but there were some. Like recently I have, I'm going to be talking to John Daly, who was on the Kroll Show, comedian. And he picked the Insane Clown Posse documentary about them and the FBI, right? Where the FBI said the Juggalos are a criminal gang organization, and it's an amazing documentary. I'd wanted to see it, but there's just too much in front of me, right? And so it was so great to be like, I finally get to watch this thing that I really, you know, except from the outside, you know, Faygo, Juggalos, Gathering of the Juggalos, like that's all I know, right? But it gives me a chance to be like, all right, I'm going to listen to some of their records. All right, I'm going to read some of these interviews. I'm going to kind of understand the world a bit more. But we haven't done the interview yet. I don't know if he's going to come in and be like, that is a funny documentary, right? Or he's going to be like, these people, I mean, it is a really kind of intense documentary because the fans, it'd be like if Guided by Voices fans or Ween fans or Fish fans all of a sudden were just like chosen to be like, you're gathering too much and you're too, you know, like it's a weird choice for the, well, not that surprising, but for a government to basically, for a musical group to be like, your fan base is a criminal organization, is, you know, really wild.
Chris, I wanted to ask you, circling back to the video store days, has there ever been a music, you know, movie of any import that only existed on Betamax? Like that was never on VHS? Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I have some Beta Max. Let me see. Swear I have it here. I have a We Are Devo Betamax hiding around in the studio here somewhere. Nice. I do feel like there was a point when I was a kid when you were starting to hear about what a video recorder was. And I remember the second Devo album in the inner sleeve said, you know, this is a still from a movie, The Men Who Make the Music. And I was like, and it said coming soon on Warner Life videotapes. And I was like, what is that? I have no idea what that is. So, you know, and then, you know, that it started popping up in commercials and, you know, like back of a hardware store would have like 20 VHS tapes, whatever, you know, before there were video stores.
Yep.
So there were things definitely that didn't make it past VHS. I don't know if things that were specifically Beta, but I do know that there were music compilations at certain times, like that Sony were putting out that might have been only like a Beta thing. Laserdisc was, there were things that were for a long time only available on Laserdisc.
Yeah, right.
And so I remember even films like Taxi Driver. It was the first time I ever heard a commentary was on a Laserdisc. Oh, yeah. And it was like pre-Criterion. And I was like blown away. I was like, wow, this technology is amazing. Now we got to flip over the movie.
Right.
You know? So... But that's a good question. I'm sure there was, but nothing that comes to mind. Yeah. And I had a lot of VHS at my store because a lot of the things that I loved were no longer available or weren't coming out on DVD.
Right, right.
So, or I had to get them directly from, like Russ Meyer, you know, you would buy Russ Meyer films directly from Russ Meyer to get his films sent to you. So if you wanted Faster Pussycat, Kill Kill, or Mudhoney, you sent him money directly. He sent you a VHS tape before DVDs. So
nice. Yeah, when I first started going to the video store as a kid, you know, it was equal beta. You walked in the store and there was beta on the left and VHS on the right. And when my mom went to buy our first video player, I don't know, the salesman probably just talked her into Betamax instead of VHS. So I slowly watched it die. It was painful. Yeah,
and it's so weird. I think if I had been involved in the choice making, I probably would have been like, Dad, Betamax is the one. You know, that's where, you know, that's kind of a music thing. But yeah, yeah, we had a top loader VHS, but luckily it also had a timer on it, so I could record, like, you know, Letterman every night of the week and things like that. And basically my life was sitting, once Night Flight and MTV came on, after school, I would basically sit in a chair with my foot, one foot on the cable switcher, which went left and right, and I would move it with my foot. And my other foot was on the VHS recorder, turning on, like, nope. It's an REO Speedwagon video. Rewind it a little bit with my foot. Get ready to see if the next one might be a Madness video. Nope. It's a Journey video. Stop, rewind. And I was like, and then it was amazing. I, like, my parents, I don't have a photo of it, but I do remember that my feet did the talking. So
that's so funny.
I've been obsessed with it forever.
I swear to God, right over here, I still have some VHS cassettes that I made when I was a kid of that same thing, like recording just random music videos or recording musical guests on, like, the old Letterman show. I have, going back to, like, his first show, like, I would record that. So I have this tape, I have tapes that are just compilations of music that I recorded off of TV. Same thing.
Yeah, I can't understate the importance of that. And it really formed me, because I was already a kid that would stare at a Ronaldo and the Loaf Ralph Records album cover being like, the clues are in the cover, and not knowing that, like, Gary Panter made the art. He hadn't heard the record. He just was for hire, but I'm like, it's all there. So I was that was my, like, animation. It was animation in my head. Like, I just could spend time listening to music and endlessly looking at this piece of cardboard with art on it. So obviously when the visual thing came, and the earliest artists were weird artists, you know, all the stiff record artists over in the UK, you know, you had Lena Lovitch and Elvis Costello and The Damned. Like, there was not enough stuff to program. So when Night Flight came on earlier, they were really smart in terms of just having a really interesting sense that we should be a little off kilter. And then MTV, it was just the nature of just having it 24/7. You were going to find gems in there. And it led me to, you know, when I went to school, I wanted to be a filmmaker originally. And I was working at a media arts center for 5 years, helping teachers with classes and helping people check out equipment. And then I'd been in bands at that time, too, but they were all scrappy punk bands with no dreams, cassettes and stickers, right? Because no one in the underground was going to. There's nowhere to go. You just did it, right? If Mission of Burma can't do it, how can I do it, right? You know? So you just did it because you loved it. But then being in a band for 6 months and all of a sudden being on Sub Pop, and then 6 months later, Nevermind coming out from that. And then all of a sudden, like, I was in Rolling Stone and Spin and all, you know, it just was like, oh, I guess I'm a musician now. And I took my foot off the film thing, although I did make music videos. I did videos for, like, Heat Miser. I did two of their videos for Elliot Smith's old band and some Sub Pop stuff. But yeah, those were my two loves. And it all makes sense, like, just my trajectory from getting to discover and have access to both film and music at the same time. And my first video store that I had access to that really changed my life was a bike shop that the owner only had foreign videos. Like, he had, like, maybe 40 films at the front of the store, and he'd rent them to you for free.
Wow.
And he eventually closed the bike shop and opened up an amazing video store in Portland at some point. But it was so cool. So that's where I saw Fellini and Pasolini and Bergman and like the pre-Criterion stuff, that, you know, that also really informed me to just have, oh, this little bike store can do it. Well, I can do it. Sure. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't that scary.
What do you think makes a great music documentary?
That's a really good question. They're so different. I think the greatest music, I will say the greatest music documentaries make you want to go out and buy a record by that artist immediately. And then I'm always disappointed. Like, I'll just be like, oh my God, I cracked it. And then I'm like, well, no, the story is amazing. Like, for instance, I'm not a Grateful Dead fan. I had a lot of friends, you know, that loved them. And I've tried. I just can't get it. It's fine. You can't love it all. But it is so funny, that documentary about them, that series, is one of the best series ever made. It's just so good. The first time I watched it, I was like, this is going to make me love their music. And I just couldn't get it. Every time the music came on, I was like, wow, like, this is the best of the best that you're showing me. The second time I watched it, I was like, it's just a great film, right? Once I knew it wasn't made for me to go out and buy, you know, all their records and get deep. But that's what's been fun about it. So when I had Andy Kindler, the comedian. He was on like Everybody Loves Raymond, and he came on with Mike Lisk from The Best Show. They know that they're like, it's a sickness. Like, being a Grateful Dead fan at our level, we know we're ill. But because they're like November 17th, da 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 da, blah 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 blah. But then they're also like, that damn naked male hippie sitting on the pole for 20 minutes behind Jerry. Like, can't they CGI him out at this point? Like, you don't watch Jerry. You just watch this naked guy dancing on a pole. And it's like, they're so critical. And so I do feel like you can't always understand it. Like, the first song in that Grateful Dead documentary, I thought was like one of the worst songs I've ever heard. And I'm like, this is what they've chose to introduce this band to me with. And I talked to David Wiseman, who directed the Cockettes movie, incredible documentary. And he was like, we were watching that and that song came on and he's like, turned to my partner. And I was like, we're in good hands. To him, it was the perfect song to open it. So it really shows me that, like, I can't come in just being like, Grateful Dead sucks, the film isn't good, da da da. This person's brought it in I have to kind of see it through their eyes. And that's often made me look at things totally different. That we don't, we also do music narrative films. And there was a film called Vox. Oh, what is it? I'm sorry. I've done so many of these. Vox Deux, I think, D-E-U-X. About this, it's a really interesting story. It's a narrative film about this kid who is in a school shooting, and through the trauma of the school shooting, she writes a song kind of as like a healing thing at the memorial, and it becomes like a pop hit, and she becomes a superstar. And it's by the director, I think, who did The Brutalist, did it. It's a really upsetting film, and I kind of didn't get it, but my guest came on, and he was a child musician. Like, he was on Geffen when he was 15, and they were like, lean into your trauma, lean into your addiction in the song, lean into the mic. Like, he picked the film because he's like, yeah, kids are not, like, young kids getting into this are often just spit out. They're not protected. It, like, the management, the record label, and he just thought it was an incredible story about something that only he could bring to the show that way, rather than someone like me seeing it. It was just so different. So that's kind of a long way to say that, like, I think that often that one of the greatest things about the show is I do get to see it through someone's eyes.
Yeah.
Because as you've all been there, you've all tried to turn someone on to something musically, and you've been there as you see it not hit.
Yep.
That's a bad feeling when you're like, this band is the greatest thing, and they're just like, uh-huh, okay, yeah, okay.
Yeah,
yeah, sounds a little replacement-y to me, and you're like, no, it's, you know. So I one of the things I really was happy about with the video store was I was not judgy, I was helpful. I was like, if you want, rent what you want. You know what I mean? And I think that there's so many music documentaries. I barely scratch the surface right. on music films that I'm just, you know, like, yeah, like I said, if someone wants to bring Spice World in, it's going to be fascinating. It's, you know, it is, and it was. So I'm into it, you know, because there it's the gamut of stuff.
Thank you. after school, I would basically sit in a chair with my foot, one foot on the cable switcher, which was went left and right, and I would move it with my foot. And my other foot was on the VHS recorder, turning on, like, nope, it's an REO Speedwagon video. Rewind it a little bit with my foot. Get ready to see if the next one might be a Madness video. Nope, it's a Journey video. Stop, rewind. And I was like, and then it was amazing. I like my parents, I don't have a photo of it, but I do remember that my feet did the talking.